This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Very glad to be with you on this Monday afternoon. Glad to talk sports with you. Boy, there's a lot of things to talk about. Of course, the big fight happened over the weekend with Juan Manuel Marquez jockeying out Manny Pacquiao in the sixth round. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Also, we'll talk about the Detroit Lions. Another loss to the Lions. What can we say? And then, we'll talk some other sports. And our good friend Drew Sharp has written a book on Dave Bing and the history of Dave Bing in sports and politics. And we'll talk with Drew about that coming up. Later on, we'll talk with Rico Beard about what's going on in his world with the Pistons and with the Lions and some other things right here on AM 870 WKAR. So remember to give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. And our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up, talk sports right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Of course, the Lions lost another heartbreaking game, but I don't know how I can say that. Maybe in all honesty, just say the Lions lost another game, another tough game, that is. So we'll just have to keep looking at them and just wondering. This year's a loss year. I don't know if you want to say they reverted back to what the Lions used to be, because they did have that surprising playoff run. But everybody is prepared to play them this year. They can't sneak up on anybody like they did last year. And in all honesty, everybody took the Lions for granted last year. They didn't think, most of their competitors and such, didn't think they would make the playoffs. But they did. They turned around and made the playoffs. They weren't there for long, but they made it. So that's all you can say, that they had a nice run to make the playoffs. And now this year, everybody realizes the Detroit Lions are a lot better team than they were before. And now they just have to play tough every game. And I'm not sure if we can say that team is good enough to play tough against every opponent that they face. And of course, when you're a young team like the Lions were, a lot of times they took a lot of teams for granted. And, they just believed they could just walk out there and beat them like teams used to beat them, could just walk out on the field. And the Lions were beaten before halftime. So that's changed a lot since then. So now we're looking at the Detroit Lions as they are, which is an okay team, not really a good team, and they're not really a bad team. They're an okay team, but if they don't come ready to play, they're going to lose, and that's what we've seen. You see a team that's not ready to play most Sundays, and they're just plain and simply ready to lose, and that's what happens most times to them. So let's see, hopefully, if they can improve over these last two or three weeks and get ready for next year, because they'll make more improvements next year. They'll have a few more better players to help them out, and maybe they'll just win a few more games. They may have enough good players that will be there that maybe they can win a couple of more games, something like that. We'll see. But that's the way the Lions are right now. They're not one of the best teams, but they have the potential. They have the potential to win a few games, maybe a few more games, I should say, than some of the games that they've already won. So maybe they will. But the Lions, as most people will say, are still the Lions. Drew Sharp will probably say the same thing. The Lions are still the Lions. And they just can't get out of their own way. Give us a call at Talk Sports with us right here on AM 870. And, how about the big fight? I saw the knockout. I didn't see the whole fight, but I did see the knockout. Okay, we've got Drew Sharp on the line, so let's bring in Drew and talk a little bit about his new book. Drew, how you doing, my man?
You're still working there? I thought you were retired.
Not yet. I got a few more days.
A few more days yet?
Uh-huh.
Come on now. They've changed the padlocks on the studio. I'm surprised you're still able to get in there.
You
can slide under the door.
Yeah,
you can do that,
there
sure.
You go.
They got enough room for you to slide under the door.
Uh-huh. Hey, now I know you've been writing that book on Dave Bing for a long time. Is it basically all politics, or is it a mixture of sports and politics?
It's a biography. It's his entire life, and it's a narrative of what I think that we may never see an athlete of his kind ever again. In that you have someone who has excelled in three different areas of his life, mm-hmm. in sports. Hall of Famer in the NBA, one of the top 50 players in NBA history. And he made the 50th anniversary year team. In business, he created Bing Steel, which in its heyday, this was a corporation that had annual revenues of close to $500 million. You know, and he started Bing Steel in the throes of one of the worst economic recessions that this country's ever seen back in 1979. I mean, people thought he was nuts to get involved in the steel business, but he made that a success, and then he was successfully elected to high public office as the mayor of Detroit. Now, his record as the mayor, you know, people is open to debate, and that's mentioned heavily in the book. But I don't think whatever he accomplishes as mayor can take away from the fact that you have someone who has achieved a form of triple crown.
Yes, because as we know, you know, being in the sports world, there aren't many people that make a smooth transition, especially into the public arena. There's been a few other politicians or sports athletes that have ran for public office and made it, but none has made it as well as Dave Bing, is it?
Well, no, I've done all three. Bill Bradley, who you know, I talked about in the book, you know, he and Dave Bing are very good friends. Bing was Bradley's financial director when Bradley ran for president, ran for the Democratic nomination in 2000. So Bradley played a very influential role in Bing's life. It was because of Bradley that Bing initially, as a high school kid in D.C., wanted to go to Princeton. He wanted to go to the Ivy League. And, you know, he didn't have the grades to, you know, he was a B student, so he didn't have the grades to get into Princeton. But, you know, he was always aspiring to break that stereotypical mold that people would have for him. So Bradley played a big role in his life, but Bradley never really achieved success in business. You know, he never built mm-hmm. anything. Now, you can talk about Irvin Johnson, Hall of Fame player who has been a successful entrepreneur. If he were to run for public office, he might be the most logical one who might be able to match what Bing has accomplished.
Yes, because Bing has had a tremendous impact, of course, you know, out in the public and doing everything he has. And it's really been a special ride for him. I know, as we know, you know, they have had their troubles, of course, in politics in Detroit. But other than that, I mean, he's really, you know, done a very good job of relating to people and making the business and going over to the personal side of their lives and making people become a very appreciative of what everything that he's done, which has been very tremendous. And you know, we're all not a little bit surprised at on how well he's done, because politics are, as you know, are so fickle.
Well, yeah, I mean, he struggled as mayor. I mean, I think he's doing a better job over the last few months. He's done a better job of clarifying his message, because politics is communication. You have to be able to communicate what your agenda is and how you aspire to attain that agenda, how you aspire to achieve it. He's done a better job of that, and it's documented in the book that the first 18 months in office was a disaster for him. It really was, and a lot of it had to do with his political inexperience. We always talk about how we want political outsiders to come in, because they're the ones who can clean up Washington or Lansing, whatever, you know, because they're untainted by the political process. But then when the outsider gets inside, they realize how tough it is. That if you don't have that experience, that ability to know how to navigate the potential political landmines out there, you're going to get yourself in trouble. And that's what I do think. That's what hurt Bing in the first year and a half of his term. And, you know, he may decide to run for re-election. I personally think he is. I don't think his wife wants him to run for re-election because he had some medical issues earlier this year. That was a very frightening experience for him. That part's also conveyed in the book. But Earl, we've covered athletes, you know, for years, and yes, we know what separates that special athlete from the average one is that they want the pressure on them at crunch time. They're the ones who aren't afraid to take the big shot, to be up at the plate when, you know, down two runs in the bottom of the ninth. Being that type of player, you have to have a certain amount of ego, a certain amount of arrogance in you. But as that ego and arrogance, I think that's perhaps clouding his better judgment, in my opinion, that, he probably should walk away. If I were him, I would walk away. No one would hold it against him. You tried. You perhaps have laid the foundation in place for Detroit to finally acknowledge how serious its financial issues are. But man, I couldn't fault him one bit if he said, you know what, I did the best that I could, and I'm prepared to walk away.
Yes. Now, when you were writing the book, did you delve much into his high school and when he got started in high school?
Yeah. Yeah. It follows his whole life. He grew up in D.C. He and Marvin Gaye were good friends in D.C. And that Marvin Gaye always aspired to be an athlete. And he and Bing would play pickup games at some of the local parks there. And some of those parks had quite the reputation in D.C. You know, that this is where, you know, we see this in all of the main urban areas where the public courts are where you see some of the best basketball play and where some of the legends kind of emerge. And Dave Bing developed that type of legend as one of those great public court players. But Marvin Gaye and him would play pickup games, and Bing said he would just wax his tail all the time to the point where Marvin Gaye decided, okay, I'm not going to shoot hoops. So he would stand around and entertain on the sides there while other guys were playing ball. So it was a situation where they both kind of found what their comfort level was in that regard. And yeah, and then Dave Bing became the first public school player in D.C. to get a major college scholarship in basketball when he went to Syracuse, because you have to understand, D.C. then, it was the Catholic leagues that attracted the most talent because of the politics and, you know, because of the culture there in D.C. that if you had money, if you were in the political, lobbyist, whatever, you didn't send your kids to the D.C. public schools. They went to the private schools, and that's where most of the talent was. Bing was the first public school player in D.C. who got a major scholarship, and that says something, because Elgin Baylor went to Dave Bing's high school, Spring Arm, and he couldn't – one of the best players who ever played the game, whoever laced him up, he had to play college ball in, I believe, Southern Idaho because he couldn't attract major college interest because no one looked – at the public schools in D.C. until Dave Bing.
Okay, we got a caller on the line has a question for you. Let's go out to your Don from DeWitt. Don, how you doing?
Hey, real good, Earl. Thanks. Okay. Yeah, Drew, I really look forward to the book. Dave Bing is just a standard of excellence. And, you know, for the critics of the job, he's doing as mayor of Detroit, and likely will be a tough re-election for him. I mean, that's a thankless job. There are just so many problems that have been years in the making, and that's one of those jobs to me. It's, you know, be careful what you ask for, you know.
Right.
I just can't imagine how anybody would take it on. But if anybody, I think, can bring Detroit together and get done what's needed to be done, it'll be him. But that said, and I'd mention one more category where he was just excellent. Back in the day when they used to do the Spartan basketball broadcast locally, he was an outstanding color man on those broadcasts for a stretch of time. I mean, just always great stuff about the game, never over-talked. It was good stuff. But anyway, Drew, my question for him, sorry to be so long-winded. You've been around a long time. I've been reading you a long time and don't always agree, but it's always good stuff. But just in all your years, who are some of your favorite people to work with as far as getting a story or to do your job, and who are some of the tougher ones to cover?
The tougher ones to cover... anyone in a Detroit Tiger uniform back in the 80s, you know, Gibson and Jack Morris, I mean, they just made your job brutal. Brutal, just trying to get information out of them. And it's changed. You know, it's gotten better, you know. But, yeah, dealing with the Tigers back in the 80s was like pulling teeth, you know. And it's gotten better, you know. And covering the Pistons during the Bad Boys era was a challenge, you know, trying to deal with Lambeer at times. But, you know, bottom line was that, you know, there's never really been an athlete who's been a quote-unquote real pain in the ass. You know, they make it hard for you, and that's, you know, and maybe that should be their job. You know, maybe they should make it easier for the reporter, because in their mind, the reporter is you know, not, at least a good reporter is not supposed to be, you know, someone who's going to make excuses and make apologies for you. It's someone who's going to try to get to the truth, whatever that truth may be, good or bad. So, but one of the best athletes to deal with, you know, I had no problem with Steve Yzerman, you know, with the Red Wings. Most hockey players are great to deal with, you know. But football and baseball players are generally the hardest.
Yeah, Drew, I wanted to ask you just about, we'll go back to the book, but I want to ask you about one, because we both were around there during the Barry Sanders era. Now, Barry was always cordial to me and everything, but he just didn't give you much.
Right, but I have no problem with that. It's not, he was, Larry Herndon was the same way with the Tigers. Larry did not talk with reporters, but he wasn't rude or belligerent about it. He just, that was his prerogative, and that's fine. I can respect that, and everyone should respect it. He doesn't have to talk to the media. You know, you don't have to be a jerk about it, and those guys weren't. Barry wasn't. Larry Herndon, they weren't jerks about it. That's what irritates you, you know, is that, you know, if you don't want to cooperate in an interview, fine. That's your prerogative. You don't have to be, like I said, don't have to be a jerk about it. And then if you don't like what's been written about you, don't complain later. You know, if you choose not to offer your side of the story. So it works both ways. You know, as I've told people for years, I tell young people getting into the business that, you know, you have a lot of responsibility. And the biggest responsibility is that, you know, you hold the pen. Well, in this case, you have the laptop. Okay, we'll modernize it there.
Yeah.
You always get the last word in. You always do. And you have to be careful with that, because it has a lot of responsibility. No matter what, you know, people can give you a hard time, but then you let them know, okay, fine, you don't want to, don't come back later if you don't like what was written for you, because, you know, you had a chance to offer some extra context, some extra perspective or information, and you declined. So.
Okay. Time is 23 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. We'll come back and we'll talk more with Drew Sharp about his book on Dave Bing. But first up, stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870. WKAR.
Many worry that democracy hangs in the balance in Egypt, that a vote to approve a new constitution would grant the president and the Islamist-dominated parliament too much power. But if it fails, President Morsi would have unchecked power. I'm Neil Conan, the battle for democracy in Egypt, plus our weekly turn to the opinion page. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon, I'm Scott Pohl. Mostly cloudy and maybe some snow today, the high in the mid-30s. Tonight, a low in the low 20s and partly cloudy. It'll become mostly sunny for Tuesday, the high 36 tomorrow. Looking ahead to Wednesday, partly sunny and a high of 38.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. So, Drew, what's the name of the book?
Dave Bing, A Life of Challenge is the name of it. I think it ably conveys a sense that, you know, this is what athletes who were a product of the 1960s, a tumultuous time, which yes. Bing was, where the athlete, especially the black athlete, realized that, you know what, it's incumbent upon us to make sure that others know that you can be defined by more than what your life is and is read like in a box score. You mean more than the points that you score, and it's not a coincidence that a lot of these guys, like Bing, like Kareem Jabbar, who graced us with contributing with the foreword of this book, Bill Russell, you know, Jim Brown. I mean, these guys who were lions in that era, and that they would say, look, we can do more than just, we're more than just a stat sheet. And they proved that. They showed that. They're more than just an athlete. And I think it was important that guys in this era, in that era, figured that out because it created an example for others to follow. And, you know, like I said, we may never see another guy like Bing again because now these athletes make a lot of money and they contribute to charities as they do, and that's it's a great thing that they do. But I don't think the motivation is there with these guys to really do what Bing did post-career and not just run a business, but to start something from the ground up in an industry, the steel industry at that time, which was near death. The American steel industry was in grave condition in the late 70s. But he got involved in that, and he helped, you know, spur that resurgence in the domestic steel industry. So it's not that he just went into business. All these athletes do that to a certain extent, but how he went into business and exactly the business he went into and the timing of it, that the economic climate was as bad then as it is right now, as it's been right now for the past couple of years. So it's to his credit, and I think this is a story that I think that transcends sports. It's more than just a basketball player. It's about a person who used sports as a stepping stone, but also a guy who used his time when he was coming of age in the 60s, he used that to help define the path that he would take for the next 50 years.
Okay. I got a caller for you on the line. Let's go to Saginaw, Michael. Michael, how you doing?
How you doing there, Earl? And Drew, this is a great question. I want to ask you. Last week when Bob Costas got on the air and talked about Belcher in Kansas City wound up shooting his girlfriend. Now, we have another incident in Dallas also where one of the teammates was a drunk driver and he wound up killing a practice player. What I got to ask you, and I just want to know, since sports is just such a big industrial complex, why the news media figure they have to opine on about what Bob Costas says? I mean, you do have opinions, and you should express them on what's going on in sports. We just want to know more than just scores and features, whether athletes' charity are doing or how he helping out. And it just upset me that why Bob Costas got criticized for making an opinion. And you guys, I used to be critical of the news media being critical of athletes and everything, but I'm coming around to it because I think it's a force at work to try to keep everybody quiet in America now. And
you can't do that now because of the social media the way that it is, that people now, you know, you have access to voice. The average person has access to voicing their opinion through Twitter, through Facebook. And we saw this, example last week with the Costas comments. And you know what? Like, as I wrote in Sunday's Free Press, you know what? I thought he showed a lot of courage in taking a stand, saying something that needed to be said. But so too that those who disagreed with his point of view, they were just as, you know, they brought as many valid points as Costas did. This is a debate. It's a societal debate. And sports plays a significant role in society because we do now, the real world now intrudes upon sports over the last 10 years like it never has before. Okay. It never has before. Okay. And this idea that sports has to be some type of escapism that's immune from the absurdities of real life, that is absurd. People who actually think that, they need to get their heads out of you know what and take a look at the real and look to see the actualities of sports today. It's big business. It's you have politics involved in sports. You have religion involved in sports now. You can't just ignore it. You can't. You have to. Bob Costas would have been a coward if he had not spoken out.
Okay.
Agree or disagree? He would have been a coward if he had not spoken out on that.
But do you think that like commissioners like Roger Goodell and David Stern, it seems like they always far-reaching and they make all these crazy decisions on athletes doing stuff on Twitter and it's just like it's so far-reaching and stuff. Why can't they just leave well enough alone sometimes? Because
that cat's out of the bag now. You can't Mm-hmm. People want sports to be back the way it was when they were kids. Okay, those days are gone. It's gone. You can't. It doesn't work that way anymore. If you're going to have, what's the NFL? I mean, what? In how much do they make a year? $9 billion, something along those lines. We'll just use that as a figure. They are the most successful entertainment entity in the world. Okay, when you have that, it is impossible for you to just think of it as just sports and just needs to be, just look at it strictly as entertainment. When it's that big, that means you're going to get exposure. When you get exposure, that means people involved in it are going to use it as a forum to express their opinions. And when stuff happens, when criminal acts happen, when tragedies happen, like a DUI or a football player shoots his girlfriend and kills himself, because it's the NFL, because it is a big entity in business, it's going to get exposure. It's going to get covered. And people are going to talk about it. People are going to opine about it. And if people want to disagree with what they say, that's fine. But this idea that, it has no – such commentary has no place because it's sports is ludicrous. It's outdated thinking.
Okay. Here's one more question. I'm glad you wrote a book about Dave Bing, and he's still living to be able to read about it and have younger people to follow along. But what I worry about – it's youth, because we talk about violence in our inner cities and how much gunshot, how much bloodshed, and how many young people are dying. But, years ago, the model was is like volunteers going out and helping kids do things like learning how to learn values from sports and things of that nature. But how much, in this day and age, everybody is struggling. So I figured they're not going to have enough time to volunteer and to help kids out. Is it a place for, sports leagues and sports teams to go out and donate equipment and clean up fields and everything? It's just, I'll let you opine on it. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, if you want to make improvement in your life, it has to start with you. It has to start with that individual. It can no longer be a situation where we need more cash from outside. We can't do that anymore. There's a story that I heard yesterday driving back from up north that students in Denby High School in Detroit were cleaning up their neighborhood, cleaning up trash around, Okay, you know what? And that's where it's little things like that, but that's where it starts. You have to be responsible for yourself. You have to be responsible for what's going on in your own neighborhood, what your next-door neighbor is doing. It shouldn't be the responsibility of someone, 20 miles away to try to, you got to come in here and try and help us out. No, you got to help yourself. And I think people now are falling short in that regard. They're not looking at trying to build themselves up as much as possible. And if they're not getting enough outside help, then it's the outsider's fault. And this is what Bing is going through with Detroit right now, is that this is a city that has screwed itself up financially. It has been politically in political neglect, I would say, for like 40 years, economic and political neglect for four decades. And now, at the possibility of the city going bankrupt, the largest city in the United States to be in bankruptcy, they still refuse to look at their situation honestly and practically. They keep saying, "Well, we need to get a bailout. Someone has to come in here and help us out here because of what Detroit has done." Again, you have to change that mindset. This is what Dave Bing has been facing. It's an uphill battle for him, and it's one of these things. If he can't break that mold, then can anyone do that in Detroit?
Yes, that's the reality. It's hard for, especially with politics, it's hard for one person to make a changes or to make changes. It's like we have to have everybody get involved. We have to make a societal change, like you're saying. It's real hard for one person or just like you say, an outside group to become involved.
Yeah, at some point, we have to help ourselves. We have to raise ourselves up as much as possible. Now, again, sometimes you need some assistance. There's no disputing that. I'm not saying, everyone should be on their own. There are cases where, yes, some assistance is required. But there's still the public has to change this mindset of dependency, of entitlement that we have not just locally but nationally. the only way this is going to happen is that when people look upon themselves in the mirror and say, look, if I want to bring about change in my house, in my neighborhood, it might have to start with me instead of waiting for someone else who I don't know, have no connection with, to be the impetus for that. That's where it starts. It starts from within.
Hey, Drew, now, if someone wants to buy your book on Bing, how can they go about it?
Well, they can go to www.earlrobinson.com. You can go to amazon.com. There are some problems there at the start. Amazon sold out the first 4 days when the book came out. But I've been assured by the publisher that the books are available on Amazon. You can go to the publisher's website, www.humankinetics.com, to purchase the book there. They are in bookstores now. A couple people said to me, well, we can't find them in bookstores. So I've been assured they are in bookstores. So, perfect holiday gift for someone you can't stand. Give them a Drew Sharp book. No, just kidding.
Yeah, but, I'm still waiting for mine.
Yeah. Well, I know you can read. I'm sorry. Okay. We'll get the condensed version, the reader's digest version for Earl Robinson, so make it easier for you. But, the feedback from the book has been pretty good. It's been pretty favorable, pretty positive, which is nice. It's the first book that I've done in this regard of this series of books. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's I'm pleased with the way things are going so far. So hopefully it'll go well.
Yeah, at least we can find out that you can even write more than a little bitty column.
Well, you know what? I told the mayor, I'll tell you this story. It was funny. During the World Series, I think it was Game 3 at Comerica Park, and Bing's communications director sees me in the press box and says, hey, why don't you come up to the mayor's suite, for a bit? He's going to be here for a few weeks. We want to talk to him. So I'm going, that's kind of interesting. So they were pumping me for information on the book is what it was, So I told him, look, it's going to be critical where it needs to be critical, but I think you'll like it as fair and balanced. I said, but I'll tell you this, though. I said this to Bing. He says, I have spent 30 years cultivating a reputation of negativity and being confrontational. And at 305 pages, that reputation got shot to hell because of you. Because it's very hard to be critical about Dave Bing. You can criticize him. You can criticize because he deserves to be criticized. But it's hard to be critical of him. Because, I think what he stands for is what every athlete should try to aspire to. You're more than what you are in the stat sheet. And he's lived his life doing that, despite, as the title suggests, overcoming a lot of challenges.
Okay. Hey, Drew, I want to thank you for being with me. And I'll look forward to reading the book. I know I'll be getting a copy real soon. So I look forward to reading it. And hopefully you'll sell a lot of them. And we'll have you back on again and talk more about the book and other things going on in sports.
Well, my next project is the Earl Robinson story. And I figured that it could only be the size of a pamphlet. So maybe like 10 pages. I can probably do that in a couple minutes. So that might be my next project.
Okay, Drew, hey, that's good.
Talk to you later, Ben.
Yeah, we'll talk to you later. Yeah, bye-bye. And that's Drew Sharp talking sports with us right here on AM 870. 40 minutes after the hour, 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Sometimes parents do awful things. Take, for example, Javon Belcher, the Kansas City Chiefs linebacker, shot and killed his girlfriend and then himself. Their deaths are tragedy enough, but someday someone will have to tell their daughter what happened. I'm Ari Shapiro, telling the kids after parents do terrible things. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Today's high, 35 degrees, mostly cloudy, and we could also get some snow. It'll be partly cloudy tonight with a low of 22 degrees. Becoming mostly sunny for tomorrow, Tuesday's high 36. It'll be partly sunny with a high of 38 degrees on Wednesday. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, let's bring in Rico Beard to talk sports from Fox Sports Reports. And Rico, how you doing, my man?
I don't know if I wanted to follow up Drew Sharp.
Yeah, well, Drew had to come out and had to talk about his book that he's got out, as you know. It sounds like it's pretty good, and it seems like he sold a few books so far.
Well, I told him, at least if it's no good, it's biodegradable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty good book so far. I've been reading it.
Okay, well, hopefully I'll get a chance. I told him I'll look forward to getting a copy and start reading on it real soon. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. Well, Rico, were you at the Lions game? Another Lions loss, or that was up in Green Bay? So you probably didn't go. So what was your take on the Lions again?
I was probably in the same spot as the Lions wanted to be at the end of the game. At home, warm, sitting on the couch, watching yet another Lion loss at Green Bay.
Yeah.
They're just snake bitten. I don't think I'm just starting to think it's in their head that they can't win at that place.
Yeah, because they've lost 8 in a row or 10 in a row, I think.
Well, I just like the stats since 1991.
Jeez.
I think it was a young rookie named Barry Sanders on the team.
Mm-hmm.
Just to put things in perspective.
Yeah, it's been a long time since they won there. The Lions, we went through that 0-16 season, and that was hard enough. But, boy, they're still coming out of that, even though I think we can't say they've totally come out of it, but they're still coming out of that, aren't they?
Well, they are, but the worst thing about it, Earl, is this team has talent on it.
Yeah.
That 0-16 team was just garbage. It was just god awful. But this team has talent. They just can't win. They can't put it together. I don't know. I really do believe that they just spent all their energy last year getting to the big boys table, only to get there and realize that you got to keep working just as hard.
Right.
And I think that, you look at all the off-season arrests, things that happen. They got there and then they relaxed and, teams passed them by and now they got to start from zero and work their way back to the big boys table.
Exactly. Because what I've been saying, Rico, is that, they don't come to prepare to play every week. You know, once they broke through there and they just didn't deserve to make the playoffs, but since they did, like you say, they've got to be ready every week. They got to come to play every week. And this is a team that hasn't been ready to play every week.
No, and especially finishing games. You look at the three games that they could have won. Imagine if they won those three. We're talking about a potential playoff seed instead of, they're looks like now they'll be in the top. I know they'll be in the top 10 in the draft and picking somebody. They keep this up, they may end up in the top 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they'll get another good draft choice, and hopefully they'll get a couple, 2 or 3 more guys who can really help the team. What this other team, Drew, Rico, that I haven't talked much about this year is the Pistons. What's going on with the Pistons? Why aren't they? They're still in the doldrums, and it looks like they're going to have another long season.
I think Tom Gores, the owner, is still in the evaluation stage. He's trying to figure out who to keep, who to let go. He's got contracts of players. I think he's still assessing what he wants to do with the team. They're minus a superstar. They're minus a star.
I guess.
They got Andre Drummond. They got Brandon Knight last year. They got some young pieces. They just don't have that impact player that, everybody goes, ooh, I want to see it when this guy comes down. They don't have that Kevin Durant. They don't have that LeBron James or Kobe Bryant. They're going to have to build this team from within. They're going to have to do it the old-fashioned way. You're not going to get a lot of free agents who want to come to Detroit. It's not a hot city when it comes to basketball. So you're going to have to draft well. So I'll give them credit. The last three drafts, picking up Monroe and Brandon Knight and Andre Drummond, that have been three successful picks. They're headed in the right direction. But if you're a Pistons fan, you don't really want to hear what I'm about to say next. But you're going to have to wait. It's going to take some time for them to gel and actually come of age. And you're going to watch other teams just flourish in the league. You're not a serious threat right now. You're an average team. You're actually a little bit below average to an average team. That's why they're not selling out the Palace. Because people, they're a long way away from 2004.
Yes. We got a caller on the line that has a question for you. Rico, we've got Kirk on the line. Kirk, how you doing?
Not too bad, Earl. So I guess I have to kind of disagree with both of you guys in terms of saying the Lions have talent on their team or are a talented team. I think that's the word that was used, a talented team.
No. I said they have talent on their team.
Okay. And that I may agree with. But I hear all these people saying they're a talented team. They're not a talented team. They have like four or five good players, and then the rest are all mediocre. There was a stat that they gave last night on the broadcast that, to me, told the tale of the tape. They said that Green Bay had something like 40 out of the players on their 53-man roster were basically homegrown, guys they had drafted and kept and hung on to, and the Lions had something like 23 out of 53. If you go down and look at the Lions draft, yeah, you got Johnson, you got Stafford, you got Sue, you got these guys they took with the very early first-round picks. But if you look at their second picks overall, even when they traded up to later in the first round, Javid Best, he's not giving you nothing, and he shouldn't have been taken there in the first place because he was injury-prone in college, and I don't know why they thought he wouldn't be injury-prone in the pros.
Yeah, I felt the same way with Ryan Broyles. Like, you're taking a guy with a bad knee, a busted knee, and unfortunately he busted up his other knee.
Right.
I'm with you. They have people who I think could, you know, other teams would covet, but after the first pick, they don't do well in picks 2 through 7, and it's starting to show where it's, you're right, Green Bay, homegrown talent, they could find players later on in the draft that become starters, whereas Lions, the first pick they're nailing, but picks 2 through 7, they're just either average players, marginal players, or wash out the league.
Well, exactly. I mean, and all you have to do is keep going down through the list. You look at Lewis Delmas. Yeah, he's a great player when he's healthy, but he's small. He's Bob Sanders incarnate, you know, kind of thing. Titus Young. What a mistake that was. You know, Mikel LeSure, okay, he blows out on Achilles, and granted, he's still coming back. He's probably not 100% healthy yet, but yet he's doing pot stuff over the summer and getting himself suspended. You know, some of their draft picks, I dare say, you know, show me a third-round pick who's starting on this team.
I think Tulloch is probably your only one.
Yeah, and he wasn't a Lions pick.
Second or third.
Yeah, he wasn't a Lions pick.
Yeah, they, when they get to the second through seventh round, they don't really address need. They're going best person available.
Yeah.
It's not been working for them. Not at all.
No.
Not at all. They don't. I have yet to see a fourth or fifth round person come in here and actually contribute on this team.
And that's where the problem lies with the Lions. And not only does it go back to the Matt Millen era where even their first-round picks were atrocious, but it goes on before that. I mean, during the Wayne Fonch years, you had a few very good, talented players, but the thing as a whole was marginal at best. And during Wayne Fonch, they made hay out of the alternating schedule of good and bad kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't happen anymore now, so you just got to live with it.
Yeah, you're right. I think last year they clearly overachieved. And I think this year they've just kind of just that work ethic just wasn't there for them. Not at all.
As I like to say, everybody comes prepared for them. I mean, people used to, you know, the opponents used to overlook the Lions and come in and figure they just have to play a half and win the game, which most of the time they did. Last year, they couldn't get away with that. So now this year, everybody comes ready to play when they come to Detroit. And Detroit themselves, they aren't ready to play. So they get it handed to them for most weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, other teams are saying, you know what, we're going to take away Calvin. Show us what else you got.
Yep.
And here's the other thing, and I'll end with this because I've tied up the line too long already. But I also heard this morning that they've got 29 guys on their roster who are free agents, either restricted or unrestricted. 23 of them are unrestricted free agents. So that tells me, guess what? You only got 7 picks in the draft. You're not going to be able to fill all those spots up. You're going to lose a whole bunch of guys off this roster, which may be good or bad kind of thing. But I think as Lions fans, guess what, folks? We got a few more years to wait.
Well, here's the other thing that I don't think a lot of Lions fans realize, because they took so many high draft picks, they're not going to be able to afford everybody. So they're going to have to either make these sixth, seventh-round picks stick on the team or just pick up everybody else's garbage, because you got Calvin, you got Sue's contract that's coming up. I mean, you got a lot of first-rounders. Fairley's contract is going to come up. You got a lot of high first-rounders that you got to decide, are we going to keep them or are we going to let them go? And if you keep them, they're going to come at a high price, mm-hmm. because, you know, it's not good to always be in the top five picks of the draft, because you got to pay them top five pick money.
Right.
That's true.
Okay. Well, okay. As I told my younger brother, you know, I knew that 2012 would not be the end of the world according to the buying calendar, because the Lions weren't going to make it to the Super Bowl this year, and that's the only sign of the apocalypse that I'll buy into.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Kirk. Yeah. Yes, a lot of people think he's right about that. A lot of people definitely believe that the Lions, it's going to be a long time before they see a Super Bowl. You know, they're one of the few, four teams that have never been there, and they're going to be there for a long time, being in that void of not having made a Super Bowl. But that's the fate that Lions fans. And you know, Rico, when I used to talk to Lions fans about all the time, none of them said they would give up their tickets because they want to be there just in case they have a good year. They just want to be there just in case they can make it there. They want to be ready for the Lions to have a good year. I always commend them for that. They are very loyal fans. They stay with this team through thick and thin. But, boy, to buy tickets on the value that they might make it there one day, boy, that's taking an awful chance.
Yeah, these are probably the same people who stand in line and put about $100 or $200 down on the Powerball and Mega Millions, hoping that maybe that $1 will make me a multi-billionaire. Yeah. And you know what happens when they draw the numbers? Mm-hmm. Just like when you pay for your season tickets as a Lion, you're out of your money and you're not getting it back.
Yep. Hey, Rico, let's talk a little bit about those Tigers. That's another team, you know, they at least it looks like they're investing wisely, doesn't it?
You know, I don't know what Dombrowski does in the offseason, because just when you think they're done, boom. Oh, by the way, we signed Prince Fielder. What? So, you know, it looks as if they're done. I don't think they're going to get – I don't think they're going to retain Anibal Sanchez. He's just asking for too much money, especially, you know, for somebody whose last name is not Verlander.
Yeah,
I mean, he's an average pitcher. I can't see paying this man $90 million over the next 6 years. Just not going to happen.
Yep, that's true.
At that point, I would go with just a young – I would bring up somebody off the farm. He's not worth it. He's a 500 pitcher at best. I think he benefited from a good system. He was smart. He would try and stay in the system, because I got a feeling that once he goes out other places, they're going to expect him to contribute,
right,
spending
that
much money. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to be thoroughly disappointed. Mm-hmm. And he may end up back at Tiger at a reduced cost, because the other team just may be like, get out of town.
Yeah, I think he might end up as a Tiger, because, like you say, just because they don't want to pay that money, and no one else so far has been or seemed willing to play him close to that salary that he's asking.
Well, he was waiting on Zach Greinke, who signed mm-hmm. that ridiculous deal with the Dodgers. And,
yeah.
You know, when Magic comes into town, I want to see where his printing press for money is, because the Dodgers are just, you know, they're making the Yankees look cheap this year. Mm-hmm. They're just paying ridiculous amounts of money for marginal players, in my opinion.
It seems like a lot of teams are starting to get that way. I mean, they're starting to play this ridiculous salaries for guys who are just average. And, you know, that's the thing. That bottom level salaries has just gone up so much. It's crazy what an average player is making now. I used to be complaining about an average player making $200,000 or $300,000. Now they're making in the millions. It's insane what an average, if you're just an average player, you can get now. You can get from a team these days.
Right. It just truly makes me wish I would have stuck with baseball a little bit longer.
Because,
yeah, I could have been making $60 to sit on a bench and, you know, bat .230.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you're a lefty, that's a license to print money if you're a lefty.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, being a lefty is like being, you know, somebody who's, you know, 6'10 or 6'11 in NBA. You'll always have a job.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's for sure.
Or a kicker in football. You'll always have a job.
Yep, you got it. Hey, Rico, I want to thank you for joining me, my man. It's always a pleasure talking with you. I'm going to start talking a little boxing. I know you're not a big boxing guy, but I got to talk a little boxing, you know, because of the fight over the weekend. But, hey, I'll be seeing you soon. I know you'll be coming down for the game probably. So we'll see you then, buddy.
All right, I'll see you this weekend, Earl.
Okay, yep, bye-bye. Bye. And that's Rico Beard talking sports with us right here on AM 870. As you know, Aaron, there was a big fight over the weekend, and of course, Manny Pacquiao was knocked out stone cold by Juan Manuel Marquez in the sixth round knockout, and it was tough. But you know, that was one of the things that happened over the weekend. It was a brutal fight. Well, let's hear from Dennis. Hey, Dennis, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Okay.
Hey, like you, I did not see the fight. I had another obligation, but I was right on Ring Magazine's website as soon as possible. And it didn't surprise me, Earl. I had chosen Marquez to win that fight.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he won the second and the third fight. He should have received a unanimous decision, but, you know, that's boxing as far as scoring goes.
Yeah.
But the idea that he would knock Pacquiao out with one punch amazed me and surprised me. And I think this speaks to, in my mind, the end of Pacquiao is a top-tier fighter. I don't think his career's over, but I think his regard and his esteem as one of the guys, pound-for-pound type guys that he was just a couple years ago, is gone. But in my opinion, Earl, the biggest loser Saturday night was Floyd Mayweather.
Yep, no doubt about it.
He's blown it. Yeah. He had a $100 million contract sitting there. And I know he had his difficulties with Aram, and I know Aram was asking for unreasonable terms, you know, 50-50 or 55-45 for Pacquiao, which, you know, Pacquiao didn't deserve. He didn't have Mayweather's resume. But it's too bad that Mayweather couldn't have met him somewhere in the middle because that $100 million is gone. Not only that, Earl, if he goes out there and he starts as Pacquiao like Marquez did, he's greatest of all time material now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he did this a year ago, September, we were clamoring for that fight.
Yep.
That would have been Mayweather's, you know, greatest accomplishment. But that's gone now. So
it is.
What do you do?
Yep. And that's what I'm saying the same thing. I said, well, goodbye, Floyd Mayweather, getting that big money fight. And you know, Mayweather just has himself to blame, because you're right. He should have made it. It could have been 50-50 or 60-40, but that would have been okay. Or if it could have been 55-45, you know, if he had, I think somewhere in there, if he had just been a more amenable to Pacquiao. That would have been a very good fight. Would have been a good payday for both. I mean, you know, he didn't have to be. It seemed like he got greedy.
It would have been an incredible payday. I think it would have been the biggest payday in boxing history. But I understand Mayweather's concerns about the split and him deserving the lion's share. But still, Earl, when people look back on boxing history, there's going to be a big a group of people saying that Mayweather avoided him, was afraid of him, and it's too bad.
It is. Hey, thanks a lot, Dennis. We'll talk to you later, buddy. Yep, bye-bye. Hey, I want to thank you all for listening, and thank you all for calling, and come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. Tomorrow we'll be talking Michigan football with Mark Snyder. We'll talk with him and talk about the Michigan-South Carolina game coming up in the bowl series. And so come back and join us tomorrow as we'll talk more sports with you right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening. We'll look to hear from you tomorrow on Michigan State University Radio, WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.